And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you yet again, coming from another strange land. Tonight for us, and I guess it's tonight for you as well, we're in a gir in Mongolia. A gir is basically a tent, but a very strong tent, a very permanent type of tent. They're all over the place in Mongolia, and we've gone out to a campsite, I guess, a touristy campsite where a lot of people from various countries go. I'm here with Hanukkah and Sasha. What are your first impressions of this place?
It's very nice. It's good to be out in the countryside, and yeah, basically it's kind of a touristy camp, but it's very small, and if you walk outside, then you're basically in the middle of nowhere, and there's some telephone poles, but that's about it, and a big part of the place is just dirt roads and nothing, and very good. It's very beautiful here.
It's a great country. Everybody's totally relaxed, and it's green, there are nice hills, and it's very, very empty. Coming from a crowded country like Holland, very tiny, with a lot of people living there, we just love this.
I got to admit, I was very surprised when I got into this this gear, because I wasn't expecting to find, well, beds like this. It's very ornate, very nicely furnished. It's like you're in a house, really. And you see these things all over the landscape. They're kind of circular, white tent structures. Sasha, you told me something yesterday that I thought was interesting, that all the doors face to the south. Is that right?
Yes, I don't know what the exact reason is, but traditionally the doors are always to the south. And it's very, very noticeable in this camp, of course, because there's a lot of girls next to each other. But also if you see the nomadic tents themselves, people who have the girls, if there's two, the doors are always in exact the same direction.
I wonder if you get a fine or something if you face it some other way.
Probably not, but I think people here are quite superstitious, so it's probably just bad luck to have it in the wrong direction. And
well, I heard that it might be the south is where the sun comes from, where the warmth comes from, and this country has basically 2 to 3 months of summer, and the rest is winter. It can be very, very cold here, so that might be the reason.
Well, we're here in the, 2 to 3 months of summer, because it was pretty warm today. It gets a little chilly at night, but for the most part, the climate is really nice. It's very crisp and not uncomfortable, I would say. Of course, being here in the winter would be a real test of that statement. Now, before we got here to Mongolia, we were in a couple of other places. In fact, the last show we did was from the Trans-Siberian Express, and I think we left off in the restaurant car. Is that right, Hanukkah?
Yes, that's right. We left off in the restaurant car, and the following morning we got out at the town of Irkutsk.
Yeah, and that's an interesting Russian town in the east. A lot of statues of Lenin still. Or actually, was there more than one statue of Lenin?
Maybe. We've seen at least one statue. And it seems the further east you get, the less Western European Russia becomes, and more, well, like Russian, or as you would imagine Russia. And Irkutsk is famous for its wooden houses. They have real nice wooden architecture. And even though along the main streets there are stone buildings, when you walk down one or two streets further, there's a lot of wooden houses, and they're really beautiful.
And also a lot of very ornate structures, too, which are leftovers from the Decembrists, those people that tried to instill a new regime in Russia way back, and were punished by being sent to Siberia, and they eventually got out of Siberia, settled in a town, and built it up, did all kinds of things, built hospitals, started newspapers, and to this day, what they've done remains in that particular town. So it's a very interesting and unique place to be, and just one of many unique, interesting places that we've been to on this trip, which continues. After Mongolia, we head down to China, to Beijing, and that ought to be interesting too. Probably next week's show will come from there. But getting back to Irkutsk, any particular memories of that place? I know there's a famous lake that's very, very close to the town.
Yes, it's called Lake Baikal, and we went there, and it's really beautiful. It's a very special lake. I think it's the largest lake in the world, with the biggest volume of water in it. The water quality is very good. They do have some pollution problems on local scale, but But overall, it's very pure water and it's very clear. You can see very deep into the water. They also have, Lake Baikal has about 1,000 species of different animals. That goes from little insects to the nerpas, the special Baikal seals, and lots of birds, of course. And I think that about 800 of these species only live in Lake Baikal. So that's very special.
And we took a trip down there on one of the days that we were in Irkutsk, and it was really interesting. We took a taxi down there because we couldn't get a bus, and this guy just basically took the afternoon to show us around down there and take us to various museums and just the best spots of the lake. So that was kind of fun. We went down there for that day. We hung out in the town for another day. It's really been amazing, all the things that we've been seeing. And of course, then we took the train from Irkutsk down to Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. And boy, that was very different. We've been used to trains with mostly Russians on them. And for some reason, all of that changed when we got on the train at, what was it, about 5 in the morning in Irkutsk?
Yeah, the train left at 6 in the morning, and we came to the platform, and suddenly it was only backpackers. It was quite a culture shock. It's probably because the train goes over the border, and so the most Russians will probably travel within Russia, and the tourists all go to the next country, Mongolia.
And that border, I have never in my life seen a border like this. I really wasn't expecting it. Mongolia and Russia, two fairly friendly countries, but it took us 5.5 hours just to get over the border. Now, obviously the trip would be a whole lot shorter if it wasn't for all that, but do either of you guys have any conception as to why it took so long?
I think it's basically also a leftover from the communist era, when basically all border crossings took a long time, and at airports it has changed now, but it's still, yeah, both countries going out of Russia took about 2.5 hours, I think, and going into Mongolia again about the same time. And they search the car, you have to fill in custom declaration, take out your passports, they go to some office, then stamp them there. And it's all very, very bureaucratic. And it's in a way, it was very interesting to go through it. In another way, it's just very annoying because you're, especially the part in Mongolia, were locked in to the train, basically. And we're there for 2 hours, no air conditioning, it was pretty hot outside, and yeah, you feel really miserable. And
we had the Pravodnitsa from hell. You want to tell us something about that, Annika? She was really kind of a dictator in our train car.
Yes, indeed she was. I wanted to use my laptop because I was writing my travel log, and the battery had run out. So I wanted to use the power outlet in the corridor, as I had been doing on the two previous trains. However, the power was turned off. So I went to the Provodnitsa and I asked in my best Russian, which again is not very good, there is no power on. And she said, what do you want? And I go, well, I want to work on my computer and I need power. And then she said a few sentences to me in Russian, which I didn't get. So as a stupid tourist, I just said, well, my Russian is not very good. Thank you. And I went away. And after the stop in Ulaanbaatar, the power just suddenly turned on. So I thought, hey, this is my chance. And I sat down on the little chair in the corridor and I started happily typing away in my laptop. And then suddenly the Provodnitsa came out. And she started this whole rant, not to me, but to a German tour leader who spoke very good Russian. And she told him that I could not use a computer there because it was very bad for the wires. The wires of the train might melt or something. And then she ran off, and the guy explained it to me. And she said it was only to be used for vacuum cleaning. And, well, we were discussing with the German that a vacuum cleaner will probably take about 1,000 watts and a computer about 40 watts. So he was going to tell that to her when she came back. And fortunately, she was away for about 20 minutes. And when she came back, she just started screaming like, that woman is still on the power. I could make out that in Russian. And so he started explaining like, well, it's not a problem because the laptop just takes a little bit of power. And then she came up with that fire regulations did not permit it. And anyway, the bottom line was, go away and take your computer and don't use our power.
And I should also point out that she had the heat blasting in the train car as well. Meanwhile, you walk one train car over, everybody's happy, the air conditioning is on, people are plugging their laptops in. You know, it's basically their little domain in the train car. And that can work to your advantage or it can work against you. And in this particular trip, this particular part of the trip, it definitely did not work in our favor. But, you know, that's part of the whole travel experience when you go to places like this. So we have Ulaanbaatar to Beijing to look forward to, see what the Pravanista is like there. Hopefully it'll be a little bit better. We're getting a lot of mail from people that have certain suggestions and comments and feedback to the various programs that we've been doing while I'm involved in this around the world voyage, which is taking pretty much all summer and a little bit of the fall as well. Here's one letter. Since Emmanuel is out trekking across this planet of ours without leaving the ground or water, I was wondering if he had heard yet of the Trans-Siberian Radio website. Apparently, it is a radio project of some sort. The plan is to turn the train into a low-power FM station. During a conference called Capturing the Moving Mind, Management and Movement in the Age of Permanently Temporary War. Okay. All while moving. It will last from September 10th through 20th as it travels from Moscow to Beijing via Novosibirsk. That's a station we passed. Very big city. I think the biggest city in Siberia. Apparently, anyone can contribute audio for the project. If you want more information, go to www.transsiberianradio.org. Now, there's a slight catch to that website. It's trans-siberianradio.org. Only part of the website looks to be functional. So that from Michael. Thanks very much for that bit of information there. Let us know what you learned from that. Here's another one, dear Off the Wall. I hope you're having a good time in my mother country, being Russia. On the last show, you mentioned that the menu had boiled language on it. Actually, we got a lot of letters about this. Although I am not aware of any such dish, which may be a good thing, I suspect that it is a boiled cow tongue. In Russian, the word for language and tongue are the same, yazyk. Thus, whoever translated the menu could have easily made that mistake. And yes, cow tongue is something that is likely to appear on a Russian menu. By the way, if you are planning on trying this dish, make sure it is a good food place. The tongue has to be thoroughly cleaned before cooking, and some cooks are lazy. Signed, Dot Kami. Thanks very much for that information. Yeah, a lot of people wrote in to say that that's probably what that dish was. I wonder if all the typos that we saw actually weren't typos, but just weird language anomalies.
There's a very big chance, and when someone mentioned the boiled language tongue thing, it's just very clear that the person who translated it took a dictionary and looked up the Russian word and then saw that it was both language and tongue in English and probably just took the top one. And yeah, a lot of stuff gets translated that way, and it's, yeah, can't really blame them. It's like they're trying their best, and it's interesting to read, let's put it that way.
It's one of the many things that you notice when you're traveling, just the way people talk about certain things, the way people phrase certain things. And bring up the subject of food. Boy, we've run through all kinds of interesting food items. In fact, today we had some Mongolian food for the first time. What do you guys think of that?
It was actually really good. In all the travel guides, they kind of warn you, like, well, it might not be that good and you might not like it, but... Yeah, it was very good. We had ayrak, which is horse milk, and it's fermented, so there's about 3% alcohol in it, and it was actually pretty refreshing. And yeah, it's different. You get a bowl, and you kind of look like, okay, it looks like milk kind of gone bad, but it was really good.
It's an acquired taste, and I haven't quite acquired it yet. I did my best. I they had this hardened sort of cheesy type of a thing.
I think, yeah, it's also cheese made out of horse milk, and it's basically very dense and so dried out that, yeah, you can almost break your teeth on it, and you get little bits of it.
And they make it by drying it in the sun. They put it on the roof of the gur, and they just let it dry there, and I think you can keep it for years.
Amazing. And of course, we wound up visiting Agur in the middle of no place, almost. This family gave us a little tour, and they gave us some food, and it was really very cool. And that's the kind of thing we've been doing. We're going to talk a little bit more about that after this feature coming up. Earlier today, I had quite an adventure. I wound up riding a horse. I guess that's really not that much of an adventure, but when you're not a horse rider, and when you're in a country where virtually nobody speaks your language, and you mix the two of them together, it can make for some, rather tense moments. And I have to say, I'm very happy to be back on the ground. And unfortunately, neither one of you was on the horse. That would have comforted me quite a bit. We're going to pick up this piece right where I found out that Hanukkah was not going to be riding the horse today. And when we come back, we'll have some more information and stories from Mongolia here on Off the Wall. You're not coming on the horse? Or a different horse?
I'm not coming on the horse.
Well, that's awfully sad.
It's a very big animal with an opinion of its own, and I think it's kind of scary.
Well, yeah, but, you know, opinions are good things. We talk about opinions quite a bit.
Well, maybe you should interview the horse then.
Yes, well, we'll see. You've been on a horse before, though.
Yes, I've been on a horse in Monument Valley in Arizona, and part of it was nice, but after a while the horse knew that I was not the boss of it, and so the horse became the boss of me.
Okay.
And it started doing what it felt like. It
started doing tricks or something, or what did it do?
Well, it started stopping eating and taking different routes, and at one point the guide warned me that the plant that the horse was eating all the time was called loco weed, because it makes horses mad. If they eat too much of it, they won't listen to you at all.
Okay, well, we're approaching horses now, and I'm starting to get nervous because of what you're telling me.
There's no loco weed in Mongolia.
Is that person dead over there?
I think he's just sleeping. Mongolia is a very relaxed country.
It sure is, but that guy looks like he just collapsed in the ground, and hopefully it has nothing to do with the horses.
So.
Okay, that horse is going away.
1 hour is $5.
Mm-hmm.
Also, fed $2,000 for the guide.
All right. Well, I just have Mongolian money, so tell me how much Mongolian money you want.
Mongolian money?
Yeah.
How much?
This stuff.
$2,000.
Okay, actually, I have some.
This is $1,000.
Yeah. Just, take whatever is appropriate. Take.
This is $2,000.
$2,000, okay, so is that enough or more? It's US dollars. $4 US there.
$4. Do you have $1?
One more dollar. I might. No, you know what? I don't think I do. $1 is about what? $1,000 or $100?
$1,000.
It's $1,000. $100.
$1 is about 1,000 tukruk.
$1 is 1,500 to work.
1,500 is a dollar.
Yeah, is $1.
That's changed since we. Well, how about I give you more Mongolian money then? Unless you want Belarus money, I have some of that too. No? Gosh. How much more do I owe?
Euro?
Not euro, no. I have euros somewhere, but I don't think I have them on me.
But they always make
Do you have any US dollars, Monica?
No, I have no US dollars anymore,
okay.
But I do have some euros, but I should get them from the gift then.
All right, well, I think I just have Mongolian money, so how much more Mongolian money should I give you?
I will ask.
Okay.
Okay.
The manager will be know the price of the horses.
Okay.
But you just keep it.
I'll keep the US money. I'll keep the Mongolian money.
You,
okay.
You have to keep it money.
Yeah.
Not like this.
I know. Well,
you're making a big
the
mess
reason it gets messy is because there are so many different kinds of bills, and it's always confusing when you have to pay for something and they're saying 20,000 and you have 50s. And.
Okay.
Those are thousands there. And 5,000. Probably a good idea just to chop a few zeros off and make ones and tens and small numbers that people like me can handle. There's another 1,000, okay. I feel like I'm rich, but I'm really not, am I? I've got 5,500 so far. And this is only one country. I have money from Russia, I have money from Belarus, I have money from Europe, and in a couple of days I'm going to get money from China.
Yep.
Not this counting US dollars.
This is 1,000.
1,000. Oh, I see. You fold it over like that. That's clever. Okay.
270.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Great, and that's my hotel key from another city. All right.
I thought it was your horseback riding ticket.
No, I don't know what it is. Okay, so I'll just cram all this back into my pocket. Okay, so there's horses all over the place here, but none of them are
horses.
The horses. He has to catch the horses.
Yeah.
That sounds a little...
You catch the lasso.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, the horse I'm riding has to be lassoed. he's running wild right now, is basically what's going on.
Over there is a horse.
All right, one of those horses.
He will bring that over top of the mountain.
Uh-huh. Well, look, there is he going on his horse with his lasso.
That's a little horse.
Yeah, Mongolian horse.
I mean, I don't mean anything bad by that. I'm just saying it's a little horse.
Yeah.
I would expect a bigger horse.
That's good. It's going to be your first time on a horse, right?
Look how lopsided he is on the horse, though. He's like over to the left while the horse is going straight.
Well, the horse is going down a hill.
Am I going to be going down hills like that? It's pretty steep hills. And all the horses now are running away from the little tiny horse, the guy on going up the hill. See, I rode a horse once before. It was, I think it was half dead. It moved very, very slowly, and I wasn't really like riding anything.
Yeah,
he's got the horse, but the horse is obviously angry now, and he's going to let it out on the first person he sees, which will be me.
The horse is eating grass. Maybe it's not going to go so fast.
I'll grab a handful of grass and hand it to him. Maybe that will make us friends. Yeah, I'm having second and third thoughts about this, but I said I'd do it, so I'm going to do it.
Well, don't let my fear of horses scare you off.
Well, it's not your fear so much as your statements of what horses do. It looks like the other horses are coming to his aid now. Five horses are surrounding the guy who's... how come I don't get a cool black horse? I'm getting a checkered horse.
A nice light brown horse. It looks really cute from here.
Oh, I got the brown one. That's right. The checkered one is the one he rode up on. But still, the black ones are cool. You got to admit that.
Oh, yeah.
Nice black stallion.
Wow.
Horses all over the place are getting upset because they're seeing one of their companions being lassoed for someone like me. Okay. They're trotting over. This may well be the last edition of the show.
Are you getting scared now?
Next week at this time, we'll be hearing music of one sort or another. Maybe a funeral dirge, who knows. Maybe if I talk to these horses over here, I can sort of get them to put in a... Oh my God, did they do that? Wow. That's really impressive that you're able to hold so much inside. And look at all the flies you have. Hi there. How you doing? Those flies don't bother you, do they? Okay. Well, they don't really have much to say to me. But really, it's... Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. I'm sorry. His head is underneath the other one. Wow. I wasn't ignoring you. Seriously, that's not where I would expect the head to be. Oh, and another head up here. Look at this. They're sort of intertwined in each other. His head is resting on top of the other one's head, and this guy's head is underneath his chin.
Oh, they're really friendly.
I guess I should take a picture, too, since
you're so
getting
cute.
All the good shots.
Oh, yes.
That's the sound of my lousy camera powering up.
Sometimes they kick.
Yeah. Sometimes they kick. Oh, how pleasant.
Just don't stand behind them.
Well, you see, the way they're standing, every direction is behind them. They're coming from all angles. Now, Hanukkah, are you sure I can't convince you to take part in this?
No, you'll be fine. Well, you'll have company of four nice French people whom you can't understand.
Yeah,
and so you'll be able to communicate with your
horse. Look, the horses are running away.
Of course.
They're running in a totally different direction.
Trying to catch them.
And that guy is still lying down on the path. If they were to run down that pathway, it wouldn't be good.
That would not be good.
No.
But you see, he moved.
Well, he moved, yeah, but lots of people and lots of things move. Doesn't necessarily mean they're
dead people don't move,
doing
so
all that
means,
well. Well, they
it
do
means
sometimes.
He's still okay.
They do. They twitch sometimes. There's involuntary reflexes. There's the wind sometimes will do it. And the horses have disappeared. Oh, here they come again. They've rounded the corner and they're heading this way. All right. I hear the galloping of the horses as they approach us and about to stampede us. Okay, and two of the horses have broken away and are going in the other direction. Three horses are heading this way, and they've passed us now. Okay, now the horses are coming right towards us. I must say, you know, this doesn't exactly fill me with confidence, seeing the horses being chased around like that. If the horse really wanted to give me a ride, he'd come up to me and, you know, offer his back or whatever they do. Well, these French people are really getting a kick out of this, I can tell, but us Americans were a little more nervous. Uh-oh.
Oh, there's some other people coming. Hey, somebody caught you a horse.
Someone caught me a horse, oh boy.
Wow.
And it's one of the brown horses, that's cool.
It's a very beautiful one.
So it's a nice horse, looks like he has a lot of spirit. Some unresolved issues. In a way, we're similar horse. We're two kindred spirits. I don't think he sees that. But
you mean you have unresolved issues
with
the horse?
Oh, plenty of unresolved issues. It's usually what this hour is devoted to.
Do you like this horse?
Oh, this horse instead. Well, he seems a little rambunctious. He keeps nodding his head and grinning.
Yeah. Oh, he's nodding yes, though. But the other one...
He's nodding yes, I'm going to kill you. That's what he's nodding. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? Don't quite know how to react to that. Hi. He just won't stop nodding, will he? Okay. Nice horse. Nice horse. I'd like a horse that's sort of, you know, in a coma. You know, kind of being led around more than going out on his own. Do they know that I've really never ridden a horse before, and this is okay?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I did ride that half-dead horse, but I really don't think that
doesn't
counts.
Really count.
I rode an elephant once.
An elephant?
Yeah.
Where was that?
It was actually in Suffolk County. There was a circus that came by, and they had an elephant.
How old were you?
I don't know. It was about 10 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
But the point is, you know...
You were not 10 years old.
No, I wasn't 10, but to ride an elephant, it's very hard to get on because it's very tall, and you can't actually... You have to sort of sit side saddle. At least the one I was on, you had to.
Did you notice that the horse got the guy's slipper off?
No. How did he do that?
I think he stepped in it or something. I'm not sure.
Well, you're just filling me with confidence here, Hanukkah. Yes. And where's Sasha, by the way? He's supposed to ride these horses, too.
Yeah, he would really like to go and ride a horse, but he isn't feeling very well. It's probably the heat. It's not the horse, I'm sure of that.
Oh, yeah, horse is coming directly at us here. At a good clip. Okay.
Oh, he's okay. That one is offering you his back.
Yeah, he just kind of parked himself right there with the other horses.
And that is good.
Okay, so you think this is the horse here, kind of brownish. I think he's the biggest
he
one, too.
He looks like a real nice horse.
Yeah, the way he's biting people is indicative of that.
Okay, you have to read.
Uh-oh, the disclaimer.
Otherwise you'll be signing.
Warnings for horse riding.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Training behavior of Mongolian horses is different from methods used in other countries. For this reason, you must be aware of the following points. Only ever approach a Mongolian horse from the left side. Before mounting the horse, check that the saddle is tight so it does not slip. Before mounting the horse, also tighten the reins, make the horse stand still and mount quickly. Don't ever touch the horses around the head. I was just patting a horse in the head.
Well,
oh, my goodness.
You.
Especially during summer when there are a high number of flies, the horses can get very agitated. I asked if they were agitated by the flies, and I got no answer. Always ride with a tight rein.
You should have asked a Mongolian.
That's true. The horses can move very quickly when they are frightened by objects, such as paper or wire, and animals, marmots, hares and birds that appear suddenly whilst in the field. To avoid frightening the horses, never put on or remove clothing while riding. All right, I wasn't about to do that anyway. When riding down steep slopes, always dismount and lead the horse down to the bottom. Well, gosh, I wasn't planning on doing that either. During rain or snow, we can skip that. To prevent your feet getting caught if you fall off, oh boy, Make sure your shoes fit easily within the stirrups. Also, try to keep the pressure of the stirrup on the ball of your feet. Never wrap the reins around your body when riding, leading, or when sitting on the ground.
Well, even Americans wouldn't do that.
Do not leave the horses alone while you are in the field. I assume I'm going with somebody.
Yeah, sure.
If you have to, then the horses must be tightly hobbled or tied. Okay, once you have returned, tell the ranger you are back. Well, that's easy enough, and then it's in Mongolian. I didn't see any.
Sorry, would you like which horses? Would
oh,
you
which
like
horse
to add? Which
would I like? Okay.
This one?
So, like choosing my casket. Gosh. He's nodding, and that sort of makes me nervous.
Yeah.
So I think that might be a good one. Yeah. Nice brown horse. I'm sorry, but your attitude just didn't seem right to me. Okay, so I sign here. I honestly don't know what date it is. I'm surrounded by horses now. I know what country I'm from. I don't know how to open this pen, though. Okay, here we go. USA. Okay, I have signed off, and I am now ready. There you are.
You signed?
Yes, I signed.
Okay.
What's the next step?
Yeah.
Horses are staring at me and I'm staring at them.
I think he's going to explain.
Going to explain what?
Well, he's explaining to the guide and she's translating to the French people. So maybe we should go over there.
Except I don't understand any of those languages.
She might be speaking English.
I really just need to know how to stop the horse when the horse is moving.
You stop it by pulling the
pulling back.
Yeah.
And then if that doesn't work, is there like an emergency brake of some sort? Or?
No, that's one of the things that scares me about these animals.
Yeah, because this horse could just, you know, decide to go crazy and bolt and head for the hills and do whatever.
It won't. It won't.
Okay, are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Left side.
Okay, don't want to walk around the back of the horse here. Which one? The middle one?
The middle one, yes.
Okay. I'm approaching from the left, right? All right. Hello. Sorry. All right. Put my foot in there?
Yeah.
This foot? All right, and well, I'm on top of a horse. I guess I gotta put my foot in the other one. Good?
Is your leg okay?
Not sure what you mean by okay, but.
Is it short or?
It's a little short, yeah. I mean, I'm bent like this. Should it be straight? It's hard enough doing this when the people you're doing it with don't speak your language. I feel like I don't know certain things I should know, though, like how to stop the horse. And it sure would be nice if this guy spoke English so I could... Yeah.
I think your leg should be bent.
Should be bent like this?
Yeah, because if you go faster, you want to be able to stand up a little so you don't bump, like, bump.
All right, so... Well, then, I guess I just need to know the commands. Well, so far he's been good. We're standing still and I haven't fallen off yet. Hanukkah, to stop, just pull back like this.
I think so, yeah.
You think so? I'd like to know for sure, you know, before I actually start moving on this thing.
You want to stop you like this, pull it.
Like that.
But if you want to right side.
Okay.
Like this, left side. Like
all right.
But it's very, you can't catch it like this.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, when he puts his head all the way down like that, how do I follow him? Okay, he's grazing now and I'm sort of bent over. Okay, now he's moving and oh boy, this is, okay. Whoa boy. You probably don't understand that because you're Mongolian, but I'm going to say it anyway.
You can catch it.
Okay, like that. All right.
This is a full stop.
Full stop. Now, of course, he is full stop, so when he gets that command,
yeah.
He must be wondering what I mean.
Yeah.
I can't look at you and smile. I've never been so scared in my life.
She says you have the same hair, the horse.
I have the same hair as the horse. Yeah. Okay, well maybe we'll bond because of that.
Maybe your horse.
Oh. Now you see, I'm not going to tolerate that. You can't do that. You can't stick your head down. No, hey, back here. Back here. Full stop. Full stop. I'd like for you to move your... Hey. Oh, he's testing me. Is that what you're doing? You'll find that I keep a very tight rein. Remember who you have on your back here. You take care of me, I'll take care of you. Okay? It can be one very long hour, or it can be pleasant.
Can you go yourself?
Can I what?
Can you go yourself?
I don't know what you mean. This is like combining two things I'm not good at, speaking a different language and riding a horse. Am I supposed to be facing a different direction? Is that the deal? Because I'm facing the opposite way everybody else is. All right, I think he wants to...
Oh.
All right, my horse is... Why is my horse moving? All right. How does my horse know to do that? These guys are all taking off without me here. What do I do? Hit him on the back to get him going?
Yeah.
Well, I did. Okay, he's moving. And we're off. Luck has nothing to do with it, Hanukkah. It's fate. That's what it is. Okay. I seem to be attached to another horse now.
Hey! The horse is here!
Okay, attached to two other horses. Okay, going down a very steep hill here. Just keeping my balance in this thing is hard. Okay, all right, there's no need for that. Getting me all wet. Now we're going up a steep hill. Not so bad. Well, that was certainly a lot of fun. It might seem long and drawn out, but believe me, my heart was in my mouth as far as that whole thing goes. It's just when you don't know what to expect, and these horses are so big, and you just feel kind of out of place in a foreign country, not knowing what's going to happen next, not having really full instructions as to what you should be doing. I was pretty close to changing my mind at the very last minute. I don't know if you knew that, Hanukkah.
Well, I feel for you. When the guy was chasing the horses to catch them, and when you were on the horse not knowing what to do, I was so happy I was not on a horse.
Well, as the ride went on, though, they actually had me hooked to another horse the whole time. And we only trotted a few times. I kind of wish I was on my own. I kind of wish I was able to experiment a little bit. But on the other hand, it is pretty frightening. It is pretty frightening being on this thing for the first time. I'm sure there are people out there laughing who ride horses all the time who say there's nothing to worry about. We met a kid today. He was 8 years old. And this kid was rounding sheep and other horses and all kinds of things, like a cowboy on his horse. It was simply amazing.
It was pretty cool to see him. It was kind of fun that he jumped on the horse when we came to their gur and started in full gallop. And it was pretty obvious from the famous, like, ooh, look at him show off. But it was cool, though. It was like a nice 8-year-old kid. And
we met quite a few interesting people. In fact, we met one of our listeners, Todd, who lives in Ulaanbaatar, actually comes from Canada. And he showed us around and had a great time in the capital city a couple of days ago. In fact, we're going back there tomorrow. Hopefully we'll be able to do some more stuff. But what do you guys remember from that experience?
There was first of all, it's just really good to meet local people always, and because you can read information from a guidebook or stuff, but it's still, you're not really sure if it's up to date or not, and if it's true, etc. And if you meet people who've lived in a country for a couple of years, then yeah, you get so much more information, and also it's more, you can ask stuff, and a lot of things you want to know about a country are not in guidebooks for some reason, and so it was really good.
So what kinds of things did you learn that were not in guidebooks?
Well, I think guidebooks basically just about everyday life say very little. It's more always kind of like, okay, the traditional stuff is this and that, and you can go there for food and there to sleep, and give some historical background. But I think personally, when I'm traveling, I like to go to a museum in a country, but really like to just walk around in the city center, go to some shops, go to a restaurant, see. It tells a lot more about how people are right now instead of what they've been like 200 years ago and what their roots are, and which it's important too, but still it's nice to see the differences between here and back home, and also the similarities. So
mm-hmm. I learned quite a bit just walking around the streets of the capital city. We went up to the Soviet War Memorial, met one of the throat singers, which we'll be featuring in a little bit at the end of the show. We actually saw a concert a couple of nights earlier that featured unique Mongolian throat singing, as well as a whole lot of other instrumentation and music and things like that. It's kind of a cool way to get initiated to the culture and see just what kinds of things they have to offer. What else did we do? We basically walked around the streets, and just, I guess that's really what you have to do, is just walk around and see life unfold in front of you. And one thing that I've been really amazed by, I didn't know what to expect from Mongolia. I don't know if you guys had any kind of anticipation as to what exactly you would be seeing. But what I have seen has surprised the hell out of me, because the people are just so much friendlier than I ever would have expected them to be. And things are just very accessible. Like, for instance, there are internet cafes every place. There are ways of communicating. There are ways of getting things that you need. And the people are not tied up in bureaucracy. It's very laid-back, kind of easygoing lifestyle, which I was kind of surprised by.
I think it's good. And it's also, of course, because of the economical status of a country, that there are so many internet cafes, basically also because people cannot afford a computer to have at home. And as a tourist, it's very convenient, of course, that you can actually go and hook up and everything. But I think it's also good that despite their economical status of not having computers at home, it's good that they go out and use computers, look things up on the internet, and use email. So it's good.
Do you see much in the way of fascination with Western ways of life?
No, not really. It's kind of in the middle, I think. There, a lot of the goods you see in stores are imported from other countries in Asia, a lot of Korean, Japanese, and Chinese stuff. And adverts, you see stuff aimed at the West, and there's like all the French cosmetic companies and things like that. And people do dress a lot like the kids on MTV do, basically. So that's fun to see always.
You know what they don't have here in Mongolia that I have not seen any place, and I'm told that it does not exist, is a McDonald's.
I'm glad they don't have one yet, but it's a lot of countries do see it as kind of a status symbol for their country, that they're now finally on the list of a country, of the countries McDonald's does want to invest in, not so much invest in, but take the risk of opening a restaurant there.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen any chains, really. Have you seen a single chain of any? I mean, I see all kinds of products, like, you know, Heinz ketchup and things like that, and Coke is everywhere. But have you seen a single store that would exist in the United States?
I don't think I've seen any chain marketing stores. Maybe some stores. There's, I think, one or two which were probably, like, Chinese-owned or something, but nothing of the usual American brands. Which, yeah, it's different. I wouldn't say it's good or bad. It's just that if they do come over here and become a really big influence, that would be a shame, I think. And
I mean, I'll say it's good, because it's good to go to a big city and just not see the same things everywhere. see different things instead, see different ways of doing things. Now, that's not to say that there's a lot of things that need to be improved. For instance, walking around the streets of Ulaanbaatar is just, you take your life into your hands, because this is not a pedestrian-friendly city by any stretch of the imagination. When you walk across the street, you may be walking on the crosswalk. You know, I'm surprised they even have crosswalks, but you're walking across this thing. Cars do not stop for you. They don't stop at all. They speed up. And there's more honking going on as cars honk at each other, then another car honks back. It's like a communication system. Cars are constantly flying down roads that are completely dark. Traffic lights are very few and far between. But you know, the odd thing is, I have not seen a single accident. Have you?
I haven't seen any either. I think the reason they honk a lot is because the car situation is kind of strange. They drive on the right side of the road, but they have both cars with the steering wheel on the left and the right side. Some are imported from Russia, some are imported from Japan, where they drive on the left side. And it's interesting. When they start to overtake somebody, they honk, basically like here I come, and it works out well. And yeah, the pedestrian situation is kind of scary. We read about it in a guidebook beforehand, and when we're walking around in daylight, we're kind of like, oh, it's okay. And it is true that if you're walking around at night and on the pavement, manhole covers are missing and there's like a 2-meter drop, it's kind of, and there's no street lights in some streets. So
yeah, well, we were walking down a street. It was pitch dark, and you just happened to point out to me, oh, by the way, that manhole cover isn't there on the sidewalk, and it's a 2-meter drop. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you remember and realize, wow, this is alien. This is different.
Well, I think it's...
What I also like about walking on the street, if they repair the road on some part, they just pour concrete in it, and then before it's dry, everybody starts walking through it. So you see these concrete footsteps everywhere.
But, you know, all that said, it still is a very friendly place to be. And, you know, to compare it to being yelled at all the time in Russia for various infractions that I committed, here people seem to bend over backwards to give you what you ask for, what you need, or to explain why you can't have it or something like that. We had some interesting food situations over the past couple of days.
Yeah, one of the problems of the friendliness is then that when they do not understand you, they will just nod and smile or say yes, and then you think they understand, but they didn't, and nothing will happen. We went out to a restaurant, and nothing on the menu really appealed to me, so I just wanted two side dishes of French fries. And I pointed it out to the guy, and I stuck up two fingers, and he nodded and he smiled, and it looked like he wrote it down, but then nothing happened, nothing came. And you guys, you got your meals, and I didn't get anything. And then when you ordered another beer, you pointed at your French fries and at me, and he said, yes, 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 of course. And so I thought, oh, he forgot it, and now he remembers. And then 5 minutes later, he comes back with exactly the same dish as you were eating. And he was very upset that I was upset that it was a lot of meat in it and everything. In the end, I just ate it.
Yeah, I think that was the right thing to do. It really was, because a situation like that, people are trying their best, and they really are being sincere about it. And sometimes communication just, you know, doesn't quite work out the way you expect it to. That's part of what you have to anticipate when you travel. And I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot of that when we go to China, which is weirder in some respects and more normal in other respects. I don't know. I guess that's something we'll just have to learn.
Yeah, I'm really curious about going to China, because when in Europe you basically see the classical image of what China is supposed to be and was sort of basically 100 years ago was the same. And I think cities like Beijing has become so much modern and a lot of new buildings. And so I really don't have a good image of what I expect. But yeah, really looking forward to it.
And then afterwards, we split up in Beijing. You head to one location, I head to another.
That's true. And we'll disclose that location later on, I think.
Okay. Meanwhile, we're here in Mongolia for another day. And I guess we're going to walk around Ulaanbaatar, try not to get run over again. Try again not to get run over is what I'm trying to say. And... right now, hopefully we can get through this night. There's beetles all over this gear that we're in. It's a great place and all that, but we are in the middle of the country and there's all kinds of animal life here. And tonight the feature seems to be beetles. I don't know why they're in this particular place.
I think beetles are back in business.
They certainly are, and I realize how annoying they were the first time. So we have to somehow make it through the night with beetles all over the place. And I guess, you know, somehow we will. You deal with hardship. That's part of the whole travel experience.
Well, the beetles we currently have in our gur are not very scary. They're like half a fingernail. But I think the first day we're out in the countryside, we're really kind of scared of a beetle we saw, which is about basically the size of a common house mouse. And it makes a really high-pitched noise. And luckily, it doesn't fly. But, I'm kind of amazed that an insect that big, because back home we've basically got mosquitoes and wasps and bees, and that's it. And so that was impressive.
Yeah, you see all kinds of interesting things out here. We saw some wild horses. We saw some weird animal-looking things. What were they called?
I think they're called marmots, although our guide kept referring to them as mammals.
Yeah, that really wasn't very helpful. Mammals, yeah. Okay. We've seen all kinds of things. There's wild horses. There's some kind of cat out there, some kind of wild cat that we haven't seen, unfortunately. And camels. We've seen camels. They're very weird and strange looking, and they're not afraid of humans at all. So we're going to continue to explore Mongolia. And, you know, I have to say, I am very surprised by this place. I thought it would be a lot more inhospitable, but it really has been. Even out here in the wilderness, it's been extremely comfortable and pleasing. And if you're looking for an interesting place to go, I think Mongolia might be that place. It's very kind of mysterious land that very few people have been to, and fewer still know much about. Now, one thing that's very strange about Mongolia is this particular type of singing, and this is what we're going to go out with tonight, the Mongolian throat singing. Have you guys heard about this before?
Okay, yeah, definitely. I've seen a couple of things about it on television back home and was really impressed about it. There's a couple of regions who have it, mainly Mongolia and Tuva region in Russia. And to us, it sounds like they're just making droning kind of noises, but they actually have lyrics, which is also very intriguing. And yeah, that it basically works by vibrating your vocal cords and parts of your throat, even inside of your chest area. And yeah, there's a very distinct sound. I really like it.
Well, when I saw it at the concert that night, it really hit me that this was interesting and weird. And then we met a guy, we went to the Soviet War Memorial, who was also doing it, and we talked to him for a while. We met a little kid on the square later that day who was practicing throat singing. So it's really something amazing that is unique to this particular part of the world. And while we're going to be journeying on to another part of the world, down to China, where we'll be broadcasting, I think we'll be broadcasting a show from Tiananmen Square next week, and hopefully not getting in trouble there. Here, we're going to be closing with some Mongolian throat singing so that you can have a sense as to the sounds of this unique place. Hanukkah, what is it we're going to hear?
Well, I think it's called, I hope that I pronounce it right, I probably won't. I think the CD is called Tsengherlin Charakdach Ul. Sorry, that is Tsengherlin Charakdach Ul. And the artist who sings it is Engbayar.
Okay, that's probably the name of the song, right? Because the CD had about 25 songs on it.
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I'm sure one of our listeners can call in and correct us, because our listeners know just about everything. Until next week, Emmanuel Goldstein for Hanukkah and Sasha. Have a good night and enjoy the music.